Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and ways to help prepare students to thrive. And today's sponsor, I want to give a special shout out to Wharton Smith Incorporated for everything you do to support education. You guys have been longtime partners for us and certainly for Sarasota County School District, and we appreciate your support. So everyone, welcome to this special episode of our podcast, Legislative Session 2025. And it was an exciting one, and it was a long one. And we have the best person possible that I can think of as our guest today, someone that I have just an immense amount of respect for. She is a champion for children and families here in our local community, and that's State Representative Fiona McFarland. Fiona, welcome to Education Conversations.
Thank you, Jennifer. What a pleasure to be on with you. We've been through a lot together over this last session, which ended up being a very long and extended session, but I always appreciate the partnership that we have and sharing ideas back and forth and, you know, keeping me connected to Sarasota while I'm up in Tallahassee.
Well, you have been just a great advocate, and I mean that sincerely. And I know maybe for the listeners who may not know, you know, you represent District 73 for Sarasota, but you certainly are a champion for the state for children and families. And I've seen you since you were first elected in 2020, and you just continue to be a staunch, disciplined legislator, and you have just such a great passion that we certainly share. A little backstory about you. You're the current chair for the Student Academic Success Subcommittee, and you certainly are leading on many other committees as well. So I would just love to start with the first question is just, what can you tell us about your fascinating past history? Because I just love your career trajectory and how it landed you into the pathway to Tallahassee.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I went to the Naval Academy for college and served in the Navy for a number of years afterwards. And, you know, when I served, I was out on ships. I was a surface warfare officer and deployed around the world. But when I left active duty, I turned the chapter to try to figure out what was next. And I worked in the corporate world for a couple of years. I was a management consultant and did some really fantastic work, but I missed government. Mm-hmm. And perhaps because I was a consultant instead of working for my own company, you know, I felt almost like a mercenary, and I wanted to fight for the home team again. Mm-hmm. And when my husband and I moved to Florida, you know, we bought our first home. We had a stake in a community for the first time. He's Navy as well, so we were very used to moving around every couple of years, but this was going to be our new home. And it just changed my perspective about what role I have to play as a citizen. What is my purpose? What is my mission? And I started looking around for how I could serve the community again. And I did some work in nonprofits and you know, started volunteering in some more capacities. But then more and more, people were steering me towards state-level policy. And it was so fascinating to me, right? As someone who had been in the military, I knew a lot about federal-level politics and what goes on in Washington, D.C. and the leaders of our country. But I was less familiar with the mechanics of state-level government. Now, of course, when you buy a home, suddenly you learn a lot about the very local level of politics. I knew about my county commissioners and what happens at the county level, but that state level in the middle was really new to me, to be very honest. But the more I learned, the more I realized that there is quite a bit of important policy work that happens at the state level. Mm-hmm. And that's what compelled me to run. You know, I am a registered Republican. I serve as a Republican. But really what drove me to run for office was more about the policy and how it can impact people in their everyday lives and try to keep and make Florida a great state for people to live in.
Yeah, and when your time period from now to when you first started in 2020, what do you think has been one of your biggest aha moments of just learning about how policy is shaped and implemented across the state?
The biggest change for me, frankly, Jennifer, has been that I've had four children. When I was first elected, my first was born during the campaign, just before election. I've been in office for 5 years, and I have four children now, so, you know, listeners can do the math. I have had a lot of kids, but it's changed my perspective. You know, yeah. I went to Tallahassee because, you know, technology policy was really compelling to me, or transportation policy was really compelling. And I thought I would work on all of these big issues or focus on property insurance, which is one of the biggest issues that Floridians face today. But then as I kept having these kids, it just changed my perspective completely.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, I did something very selfish this last session. I was working in transportation policy, but I snuck in there that pregnant women can park in handicapped spots. And I had all these groups reach out and say, who gave you this idea? What made you think about this? And I was like, well, to be honest, it's because I've had two babies born in the summer in Florida.
Yes.
That's exactly why I'm doing it. And we were able to pass that into law. So if there's any mothers to be out there, you can now qualify to park in handicapped parking spots. You just need to have a note from your doctor saying that you're pregnant, and then you go to, your local DMV and they'll get you a placard. It's good for 1 year. And I hope that it'll bring some relief to moms, especially who are pregnant in the hot, hot summer.
Heck yeah. Well, I was one of those summer moms too. I think your authentic response on that is just so reflective of who you are as a person, Fiona. And I just, I think that is probably also what had gravitated you to the work and the policy behind families and children. And so I'd love to just dive a little bit deeper into this particular session, which was unlike others that just in my time period. I don't know if historically, are you aware of any session having gone as long as this past one did?
Certainly not. We are very proud that we are a part-time legislature. We go up to Tallahassee for a short period of time and we come back to our communities. And our session is typically 60 days long. But because we could not finish our budget, which we're required to do so, we had to extend session.
Yeah.
We kept extending it right up until the deadline of when the state's fiscal year ends. And I know that was very difficult for a lot of entities that are used to, having their state level funding and knowing what their budget will be for the next year. There was an extra quarter of uncertainty for a lot of those entities. And I know that was really difficult. I did not enjoy it myself.
Yeah. It was tough. In light of the extension, do you reflect back on that session in terms of some really good wins or some big impacts that are going to affect Sarasota County residents?
Yes. From the education perspective, we've done such high profile banner changes in the last couple of years. Universal vouchers, doing more and more every year to increase the choice options for parents as they're navigating their child's educational journey. We've had a lot of wins in the recent past. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a headline banner thing that we've done this year for mm-hmm. education, but there was a lot of cleanup we needed to do.
Yeah.
So my oldest is 5, and we were navigating the decision of where we're going to go to kindergarten. And you mentioned this at the top, but I was the chair of the Student Academic Success Subcommittee. And so a lot of what we looked at was totally relevant and timely for me as a mom. Mm. And I think that's a helpful perspective to have as a lawmaker. When I want to support a policy that doesn't help me as I'm entering the school system, no, of course not. Because if it doesn't work for me, it's not going to work for other parents out there. That was a good lens for me to have. One thing that we were hearing from school districts was regarding choice. As parents are deciding whether they want to go charter, private, public, homeschool, whatever the option may be, as families are shifting between those choice options for them, the student can sometimes, from a financial accounting standpoint or like a data standpoint, get lost. And in some cases, the student was being double counted from a financial perspective. Mm-hmm. So they were counting as, say, a private school student, but also a public school student.
Right.
And we pride ourselves on saying the money will follow the child in Florida. But because of just technical glitches and because, governmental infrastructure is not as great as we all wish it was, mm-hmm. we were finding that we were losing, quote unquote, losing this child in the system somewhere.
Yeah.
The child wasn't actually lost, right? The teachers always know where their kids are. Parents know where their kids are. But from a structural standpoint, the money wasn't following the child. And in some cases, school districts were ending up with more money. Mm-hmm. that they had to then pay back at the end of the financial quarter, or the opposite. They were having to operate for a quarter in the red and then try to find that money elsewhere. So we made some changes between our state funding organizations that help with those voucher programs. The data will translate the way that we should expect in the year 2025. We've made some improvements there, and I think that will be really, really helpful for both school districts and private and homeschool parents as they're trying to understand where the money is going.
For sure. And that's a great example. And just kind of staying on that lens of the financial impacts, did you all have conversations around the Florida Education Finance Program, FEFP, and the formula to that? Was that a place of discussion or reconsideration of how that's evaluated?
We really did. And I am imagining if you are listening to an education podcast in the state of Florida, you are probably one of the parents that emailed me during session. Because one of the elements of our FEFP funding formula that we really spent a lot of time on was how we fund these magnet programs, these accelerated academic
programs.
Exactly
right.
Yep. AP, IB, ACE, dual enrollment. Now, I'm going to get really wonky for a minute, but I think we're in a podcast, so this is the right format for it. Many, many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, we created this system of trying to incentivize schools to offer these accelerated academic options, and we called it an add-on weight. And the way we did it, we'll use IB, International Baccalaureate. We'll use IB as an example. If you're a school, we would really like you to offer IB programs. But those are expensive programs. You have to, you know, you have to enroll in the IB global network. The teachers have to get trained in a certain way. Some of the classes need expensive equipment like a microscope or different materials. So there's a cost to offering those programs. And we wanted to recognize that. So we said, if you're going to offer this program, we'll give you a weighted bump for funding.
Yep.
In this formula. The input variable is the base student allocation, which is when we say the money follows the child, that's that money that follows the child.
Right.
That's the input variable, is the base student allocation. But then there's a multiplier. And one multiplier is, you know, offering the program to begin with. And the second multiplier comes when your student scores well on the final exam.
Right.
And that bump, in the state's opinion, should have been a bump that goes to the teacher. This is a bonus. It's a bump up on their salary because we really want to reward those teachers who are teaching the magnet programs, especially because they have to do more training outside of school mm-hmm. hours. Mm-hmm. That was great. That worked out great in the past. It brought us to the point where most, if not all, of our schools are offering some accelerated academic program in some form or another. However, the formula got away from us. The reason why this got away from us is because that input variable, that base student allocation,
yep.
has ballooned in the 30 years yes. since we created this program
right.
in a way that didn't tick and tie to the growth of these accelerated academic programs. Now, this is a mix between policy and a financial accounting explanation that I've just given, but what did it result in? What it resulted in was a ballooning pot of money that went to the school districts, and we very loosely just said any money that comes from this quote-unquote add-on formula needs to be reinvested into the system. It needs to go to the teacher salary and the teacher bonuses or reinvested to cover the cost of the program. And we sort of left it at that. We didn't audit it. We didn't check up on it. But the money just grew in a way that didn't correlate with growth of those programs or growth of students who were scoring a high score on the final exam.
Mm-hmm.
And so 3 years ago, we started to try to figure out if the money was appropriately used anymore. And we just said, hey, school districts, can you tell us where the money is going? We could only ascertain that 5% of this money was going to teacher salaries or teacher bonuses. And the other 95% was question mark. That was a little bit alarming to us. I truthfully, personally, don't believe that only 5% of the money was going to teachers. I think there probably was a little bit more that was going to teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But fine, we can only trust what the data shows us. So if you want to assume that only 5% is going to teachers, we need to do something about that. So then the next year, we said, let's take another look and individual school districts break down for us where that money is going. If it's not going to teacher salaries, where is it going to? You know, are you buying a new school uniforms for the field hockey team or something? Where's the money going?
Right.
And when we broke it down even further from the financial categories that were reported back up to us from the school districts through the Department of Education to the legislature, was that only 60% were either going to teacher salary, materials, cost of the program, and 40% was just going into a category called other. Now, in Sarasota, I spent a lot of time with Superintendent O'Connor, and we learned that some of that money was going to an ACE program coordinator, mm-hmm. you know, someone at each school who's tracking the hours and the credits and managing that, because that is truthfully a very full-time job.
Yes.
Or perhaps it was going into travel. Maybe we were sending the teacher down to Manatee County to try to recruit students up into our schools, mm-hmm. or maybe they were traveling to a conference or something. But whatever the detail may be, it was just going into this category called other, and that made us uncomfortable. Now, I would bring that money home every day to Sarasota because I feel very confident in the conversations that I've had with our district leadership about where the money was going.
Sure.
But I couldn't vouch for other districts.
Right.
So in the beginning of session, we took this approach that we said, fine, if we can only tell that 60% is going back to these students, and we've seen a decline in both offering and enrollment in these academic, these accelerated academic programs, then we need to tighten the belt financially. And very boldly, we said we would cut that add-on weight total amount by 50%.
That was the original policy proposal.
That was the original proposal.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Did we hear about it?
It created an uproar.
My office has not received more feedback about any other issue in my 5 years up there.
Wow.
And we hear from constituents very regularly. This issue just really
struck a nerve.
It struck a nerve.
Yep.
And I was hearing from our district leadership, and I was hearing from families and teachers, and it gave me great pause. Mm. And thankfully, at the very end of our extended session, we retained our current level of funding. We actually increased it. We increased it, 3-5%, which is a pretty average year-over-year increase. Mm-hmm. But we changed it. Instead of having this BSA, this add-on weight formula, we moved it into the FEFP calculation, and we made it a categorical.
Okay.
When we say categorical, we've got, 12 or 13 of these, and we say this money can only go to this purpose. So, for example, one categorical that we have in the FEFP formula is for teacher salaries.
Right.
So a district can never take this pot of money that we've given them, that's, we call them colors of money or pots of money. They can never move that categorical of salary into another pot of money. They can't use teacher salary categorical to pay for transportation. There's another categorical for transportation. Now, we made one for these academic accelerated programs. I am pleased with where we ended up. I don't love the process by which we got there, but we got to the right place. I mean, this is politics. It's the sausage making factory. Right?
Sure.
I do believe we got into a good place in the end, but we will have more work to do on this funding variable next year.
Well, do you think, as you look at that variable, are you all going to look at the full funding formula? Because I think it's been, since 1973 that formula was put into place and hasn't...
I know it's been on the books for quite a while, and so that sounds right to me. But yes, we need to look at it again.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
I imagine when we started it, we wanted to incentivize schools to offer... We don't need to incentivize schools anymore.
Yeah, right. And particularly with the expansion of choice, I think everyone's elevating their level of, competitive rigor and academic offerings for sure, because that's what attracts families to many of the schools. So, interesting.
Absolutely.
So I guess we'll just consider this a work in progress, but certainly a small victory as the, I think there was some level of resolution behind kind of the sharing of what the outcome could be. The money stayed in place, it just slid over to a categorical. So I guess everyone could consider that a compromised win-win. Is that fair?
It feels that way, yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, fair enough.
Yes, well, the headline is, for all of those parents and teachers and administrators out there who reached out to me, who are listening, you can declare victory. There will be no decrease in funding to these academic acceleration programs. No decrease in funding. Slight increase.
That's great. That's good to hear. Well, I know that probably would have taken you more than 60 days to figure out, so maybe it's a good thing this session extended. Well, I want to ask another question, and I know our time is probably coming closer to the end, but and this is probably chock full of information too, but we've seen significant growth in terms of K-12 education, public education, and the way in which Florida is viewed across the nation. And yet we also have a lot of change happening in the higher education space. Do you see there's a disconnect between the two in bridging the whole K-16 continuum in Florida? Do you see either of them being out of sorts or in that evolution process still? I'm just trying to pull from just the distinction between K-12 and higher ed and how the two roads shall meet.
You're totally right, Jennifer. It is disjointed. We've made various structural changes over the year to try to view it more holistically. We've changed some of the leadership, the departmental structure at Department of Education. From the legislature's perspective, we've changed our focus for how we view the funding. Mm-hmm. So we've made some changes, but the truth is the two systems are, as you said, disjointed. What I'm pleased about is the investments that we've made in Bright Futures, not just in the Bright Futures program, but also the pipeline of it, right? How do we talk to high schoolers about letting them know that this is a financial option for them?
Yes.
Early enough so they can apply and qualify for it.
Yeah.
anyone out there who's got a high school senior knows how difficult it is to get into our state universities right now. Our state university system is ranked in the top three in the country.
Right.
The state university system is, we've got a lot to be proud of. But as Florida grows, so does enrollment.
Right.
I'm proud that we have kept our in-state tuition levels consistent. It is a great deal for a Florida family. Between in-state tuition and Bright Futures, you basically have college for free.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that, and we should keep that. I'm curious to look more into how we balance in-state versus out-of-state students, mm-hmm. and make sure that we're re-examining that as our state's population is growing, to make sure we're serving our Florida families. Now, for career and technical education here in Sarasota, which we know that our career and technical education is part of the school district.
Right.
Right. Their budget comes from the school district. That's not the case statewide. In some different counties, it's separate from the school district. I would advocate for Sarasota's system because it does ensure that the look is more holistic.
Mm-hmm.
People are people, and there is no greater incentive than money.
Right.
Particularly when it comes to offering these financial programs. So to have them under the same, financial viewpoint, I think is really helpful in making the transition from 12th grade into whatever comes next more seamless.
That's right. That's exactly right. And just to tag onto your point about just the Florida Bright Futures, and for any families that may be listening, to your point, seniors do need to apply. And just to highlight how important it is that students do apply for Florida Bright Futures, they have until August 31st of their graduating senior year. So after they just graduated, they have until August 31st to apply. Even if they don't think they're going to use the funds right away, they still need to apply, because once that date passes, they are out of luck. So you don't want that to be a hard lesson to learn. So I just throw that as a caveat for anybody that maybe sitting in that situation. So, well, Fiona, is there anything that in this conversation, and you certainly just fired off some great information, and I think it's been very helpful to our listeners. It certainly has been helpful to me, but is there anything that we missed talking about that you felt was a real highlight from looking back on this past legislative session?
There's one more that I wanted to cover today, and that's a bill that didn't pass. We had a lot of good conversations about it, but this bill is regarding school grades. It's not the student's grade, but the school grades. And just last week, we had the Department of Education released the school grades for this past academic year, and Sarasota is doing amazing. But the conversation we had in this bill that was filed was to recalibrate the way that our schools are graded. I think to you and I, if I tell you that a school is an A school, numerically, you think that school probably has a score that's somewhere in the 90s, right? Like, we all remember this. 90% is an A, 80% are B, and so on and so forth. Well, the way that we have our scoring, that is not the case. And we had some concern, or the sponsor of this bill had some concern, and we had great discussions in committee as the bill moved along. We were not unanimous on this, which is why it didn't pass. But we weren't totally comfortable with the fact that an A school is scoring in the 60s. Yes, it is still out of 100%, but by the way that we grade schools, and it's weighted, you can actually hop on the DOE website and see all the breakout for the grading. It's a very long spreadsheet, and you can get very in the weeds on it. But there's all these elements that schools are graded across, and it'll show total possible points that you could have scored. Yeah. How many of those points were you eligible to score against? And of the points that you were eligible to score, what did you score? And schools that are getting a 60% are still classified as an A-rated school. Now, maybe we're okay with that grade inflation, and if DOE is going to call them an A, we're okay with it. But because we are so big on transparency for parents to know how they are, be informed as they're making their choices for educational choices for their children, the bill sponsor just wanted to make sure that if parents were going to proudly send their kid to an A-rated school, that school should be scoring in the 90s. If you look at the grades, and I did for Sarasota, I think under the new grading system that she was proposing, we would have only had one A-rated school in the whole district. Mm-hmm. And that was incredibly alarming, obviously, to a lot of our school administrators, but also to some other stakeholders. So as the bill morphed and we amended it, we had a 10-year glide path by which we would get up to this truth in grading standard. That's a pretty bold proposition, and that's why the bill didn't pass this year.
Sure.
But I would be curious what your listeners feel about that bill.
I think, to your point, most people don't have the full understanding of how the points are calculated and what actually qualifies as an A, B, C, or D. And I think to your point, we do have that kind of learned discipline that an A is 90 or above. And so there's just that default factor of what you learned in school would apply to school grades. So I think there's truth behind that perception. To what degree it all needs to change, you know, I'd be curious. I mean, you might get as many phone calls as you did as the academic acceleration. But I think there is value in you bringing that up. So we're going to watch that then. You think it's going to continue coming forward, and do you think it will pass next year? Or do you, you know, kind of what's your sense of that?
Honestly, I don't know. You know, there definitely would have to be some significant changes to the details of the bill for it to pass again next year. I do think that the bill will be reintroduced. I don't have a clear vision of what would need to change in order for everyone to become more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
You know, even when we extended the time for implementation up to 15 years so that no one would wake up tomorrow and go from an A to a D-rated school overnight, I just don't know.
Yeah, well,
I guess we need to relook at the grading system overall for schools.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack on that one. And the time frame, certainly I would think a longer lead is, you know, important. But here, you and I cannot sit and create policy amongst ourselves. That's why we send you to Tallahassee to get that all figured out amongst all the other legislators. But Fiona, I just am so grateful for your service to our community, your support, your just unfailing support to the Education Foundation. You always show up and just champion us on behalf of the students and teachers we serve. And I just really want to extend our heartfelt thanks for your leadership.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. It's a real treat to represent Sarasota, not only because of how beautiful Sarasota is, but because we have great local leaders like yourself. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And listeners, I hope you all enjoyed listening to Representative Fiona McFarlane as she just reflected back on a very exciting and work still left to do in the state legislature. And we just always welcome you all to tune in to whatever channel that you use, your favorite podcast episode. And then you can always find out more information about the Education Foundation at www.edfoundation.org/SRQ. But everybody, we were just so glad to have you all join us today. And everyone, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.